All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, coming at you during this Super Bowl bye week. And it's one of those weeks where we get a little taste of what's to come, and I don't mean this in a good way. This happens every single year because the Super Bowl, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl itself a lot in next week's show when we're getting ready for the game, but every year when we get our Super Bowl matchup and everything is ready to go, I start getting really excited because the Super Bowl, I don't care what anybody says about over-commercialization, which they might have a point, or about how it's not even about the game anymore, it's too big of a this or that, or, oh, well, it's not the Bucks, so whatever. You know what? It's the Super Bowl. I can count on one hand the number of sporting events that actually make me feel different just getting out of bed in the morning the day of the event. And the Super Bowl is one of them. And again, it doesn't matter what else might be around it or what else might be going on or all the things you want to talk about. It's still the Super Bowl. It's still the greatest sporting event ever created by mankind. And I love it. But it's also the last game. And I start thinking about, oh man, here we go. One more game and then that long, dark, cold offseason hits us hard. And that's what we're facing. Get a little taste of it this weekend. We do have the Pro Bowl. And there's another one where I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what anybody says about how crappy the Pro Bowl is. Or how, oh, well, they're barely even playing. This isn't football. What a joke. Blah, blah, blah. Hey, yeah, you know what? All those things are true. Guess what else? There ain't nothing else on during the Pro Bowl. There's no other football during the Pro Bowl. It's the only thing you got left, baby. So to quote the Nature Boy, you may not like it, and that's okay. You don't have to like it. I don't like the Pro Bowl that much. But on a weekend like this one where there's nothing else going on, football-wise, you better learn to love it. And I'll watch it, and I will gamble on it. I gamble on it every year. I mean, for a small sum of $5, usually I'll do like a $5 parlay on the over. Or actually, the under is a pretty good bet in the Pro Bowl because they make the over-under so ridiculously high. But the point is, I'll make a small $5 parlay bet on one of the teams plus the over-under where five plays like 15 or something like that. And boom, for $5. I just paid $5 to care about the Pro Bowl. And I might even win the bet and then I get paid to watch the Pro Bowl. So we'll talk about that on the show today as well. The Super Bowl, all that stuff. Next week, we'll get really hard into the Super Bowl, but I do want to talk about the conference championship games real quick. I mean, there wasn't a ton of noteworthiness to go with the NFC championship game, obviously the Eagles, and a big surprise. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if you told me the Eagles were going to win the conference championship, but to see them dismantle Minnesota like that was surprising, and I should have known better because, one, you've got a dome team going outdoors, and if history has taught us anything, again, especially if you're a gambler, you know those dome teams going on the road outdoors in the cold don't do well. But another thing I should have known maybe is that given the nature of how the Vikings advanced to the NFC Championship game, and you don't really think there could be a letdown. I'm not saying they lost because of a letdown. The Eagles are just better. But, you know, to have a win like that win against the Saints with the Stephon Diggs thing, sometimes when it's that shocking, that unbelievable of a type of win, and it's almost like that becomes the team's Super Bowl there. They just don't, you know, they can't come down off that high and get reset in time. And I'm not saying that's what happened. I mean, this is all armchair psychology. But when the Eagles did beat the Vikings, it got me to thinking. Because I remember game 162. For those of you who are baseball fans, and if you're Rays fans, and there's a lot of Bucks fans who are also Rays fans, obviously here in the Bay Area. Game 162 back in 2011, that was the night, for those of you that don't know, that the Rays and the Red Sox were tied going into the final day of the regular season for a final playoff berth, the wild card berth. And the Red Sox were playing up in Baltimore, the Rays were at home against the Yankees. And if they both won or both lost, there'd be a one-game playoff the next day. If either team won and the other team lost, that team would get in. So what happened that night? The Yankees got out to a 7-0 lead on the Rays. 7-0. Meanwhile, Boston was beating Baltimore by a few runs, and it was just like, wow, like that. We're not even going to get a playoff. Like, they're just going to lose their playoff bid tonight. Boston's going to beat Baltimore. We're done. We're already down 7-0. And what happened, we all remember. The Rays famously came back to tie the game at 7 on Dan Johnson's just incredibly improbable home run in the 9th inning. After a grand slam by Evan Longoria earlier in the game that cut it to 7-4. I mean, all this stuff happened in that game. It's impossible to just recount without still being in awe of it. Meanwhile, Boston blew their lead in Baltimore. Not only did the Rays come back and get the win on Evan Longoria's extra inning homer, but Boston lost, all happening within a few minutes of each other, and the Rays got the wild card playoff berth. You know what happened a week later that no one ever talks about? And I always chuckle when I hear people mention Game 162 as one of the top moments in Tampa Bay sports history, because it's nowhere close. The Rays got their asses kicked by the Texas Rangers, and we're out of the playoffs. I mean, it was like less than 7 days later after Game 162. And now, the Stephon Diggs play, the Minneapolis Miracle, as they call it, joins Game 162 in the annals of history as just incredible games. Games that if you saw it live, or moments that if you saw them live, you'd swear, wow, when it's your year, it's your year. That team's going to win a championship. And then a week later, they were done. And it becomes a mere footnote in history. And to me, and some people disagree with me, and if you do, that's fine. But to me, you know, you can appreciate the moment just for what it is itself, just the moment. But what the team goes on to do after that moment makes a big difference in where that moment ends up ranking in history and in your memories. And the Minneapolis Miracle had the Vikings won the game in Philadelphia, and at least got to the Super Bowl. If you get to the Super Bowl, it would have been something. Much less win it, that would have gone down as one of the greatest moments in NFL history, in my opinion. And now, it'll be a nice little story in a few years. Same with Game 162. I mean, that was unbelievable. That was one of the most wild nights in Major League Baseball regular season history. Had the Rays gone on to beat the Rangers, win the ALCS, go win the World Series, you'd be talking about not just an all-time Tampa sports moment, but an all-time MLB sports moment. And now, it's a nice little memory for me. Some people that rank it, again, in the top two or three Bay Area sports moments, I think that's crazy. They lost. They got their asses kicked. They were out of the playoffs a week later. It got them one extra round. And again, you can appreciate moments just for what they are. Not everything has to have the context of a championship with it. I get that. I really believe that. But that was the first thing that popped into my head watching the NFC Championship game on Sunday, was when the Eagles were beating the Vikings. I was like, really? That's it? The Minneapolis Miracle? That's okay. That was fun for a few minutes, I guess. That's it, though. You know, it doesn't mean all that much, ultimately. It could have been the Vikings going to Philly and getting hammered. It could have been the Saints going to Philly and getting hammered. But it didn't make a difference. And then I started thinking about other great moments in sports history. That what would they have meant if the team had gone on to lose after it happened? And I even had to look a few of them up. The Kirk Gibson home run came to mind first. That was the 1990 World Series. I believe it was 90. When Kirk Gibson, you know, with the injured leg, basically an injured knee and an injured hamstring, two bad legs, could barely walk from home, from the dugout to home plate, much less run the bases. Tommy Lasorda calls on to pinch hit. He goes deep with a two-run homer that he, like, golfs. He can't even bend his knees to go down low and golfs it out of the park out of Dodger Stadium. One of the greatest moments in MLB history. Dodgers went on to win the World Series. That was game one. They took a 1-0 lead. But what if they had gone on and lost the series in six games? They'd be like, okay, eh. You know, stuff like that. Stephon Matteau. Eastern Conference Finals 1994. Rangers, Devils, the overtime winner, the announcer. Matteau! 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 Mark Messier and the Rangers go on to win the Stanley Cup. You know, what if they had lost Game 7? That was Game 6. What if they had lost Game 7 to the Devils? Or lost the Stanley Cup Final to the Vancouver Canucks? Would have been an okay moment, whatever. And I was all ready to make my grand point, by the way, with this one final example. I was like, Bobby Thompson, the shot heard around the world, the Giants win the pennant. That's one of the most famous moments in sports history. Admittedly, that one doesn't make my point because the Giants, I didn't even know this. Like I said, I had to go look it up. Actually did lose the World Series that year. They lost to the Yankees. They took a 2-1 lead in the World Series against the Yankees, lost the final three, and lost the series in 6, 4-2. And then I started thinking, well, wait a second. Why is the shot heard around the world such a big deal if they didn't even win the World Series that year? And I started questioning the shot heard around the world, which again is what, and that's something that's more, very few people listening to this remember that or are old enough to know what that was in person or, you know, in modern times, but yeah, we all know what it is, right? The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. We all know that one. They lost the World Series. Kind of takes some of the luster off that. A little of the bloom comes off that rose, in my opinion. And so, with it, go the Vikings. But it's just an interesting thing because, to me, again, it matters. Context matters. And how you do after a moment like that. Of course, a lot of moments like that happen in the championship, and then it's assumed, it's a given that you won. But when those moments happen earlier in playoff series or late in regular seasons, and then you don't end up doing anything with it, to give you a Bucks example, just to kind of bring it home for people who maybe know more about the Bucks than they do all these other things. Do you remember the 2000 season? Do you remember the Bucks? It ended eventually with the Bucks losing in round one in the wild card game in Philadelphia, but the Bucks were making a big push there in December to get a first round bye and win not just the NFC Central, but be one of the top two seeds. The Super Bowl was in Tampa that year, and if you remember this, we all thought the Bucks were going to get a first round bye, win the NFC, be the first team to ever play in the Super Bowl in their home stadium. I remember having conversations with friends of mine about, because I used to stand at the railing in the end zone. I still do when I go to Bucks games, actually. I didn't really use my seat. I would always stand there, and we were talking, like, hey, I heard they're going to leave the rail here, so we should still be able to stand here when we're here for the Super Bowl in a few weeks. Like, we just got to get tickets, but we should be able to do that, and then we're going to come right back to this spot that we stand at for every home game. It'll be just like another regular season home game, only going to be the Super Bowl, dude. Oh, man, it's going to be awesome. I was 20 in 2000. And we thought it was going to happen. Like, people forget that now. So, what eventually happened was that on week 17, the final game, Martin Gramatica missed a game-winning field goal at Lambeau as time ran out. And the game stayed tied. Packers ended up winning in overtime. Bucks win that game. They would have been a 2 seed. As it is, they lost, dropped to a 5 seed, went to Philly in 2000, and just got hammered 21-3. And it wasn't even that close, if you remember. So, before that, in 2000, was the greatest game I've ever seen played at Raymond James Stadium. Or at least the greatest Bucks game. The greatest game played at Raymond James Stadium is probably the Super Bowl between the Steelers and Cardinals. That's the best Super Bowl of all time, in my opinion. And probably the best game of all time at Raymond James Stadium. But the second best was Bucks-Rams Monday Night Football the week before Christmas in 2000. When the Bucks were trailing Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk and Torrey Holt in those super greatest show on turf Rams. And then, you know, you had Sean King in there. Warwick Dunn on the final game-winning drive gets wrapped up in the backfield, turns around, laterals the ball back to Sean King, who then runs and picks up like 15 yards and a 15-yard late hit penalty to keep the drive alive. Then Warwick Dunn scored on like a hurtling, leaping touchdown. He got helicoptered in midair, flipped into the end zone. I mean, just unbelievable. There's the great, one of my favorite Bucks fan memories of all time was being at that Monday night game in 2000 against the Rams. I don't know how many of y'all remember it, but if you've been a Bucks fan for all this time and you're not somebody who's newer, then I know you remember it. It would go down in history as one of the top 3 or 4 Bucks moments in team history. Had the Bucks gone on, again, to get that first round bye, host playoff games, maybe play in the Super Bowl in Tampa, maybe win the Super Bowl in Tampa. It would have been legendary, and now not that many people talk about it anymore. And rightfully so, because the Bucks ended up just being ho-hum 9-7, or it might have been 10-6, and losing in the first round of the playoffs. But that was unbelievable. And that moment does stay with me anyway. I mean, I don't say I don't appreciate it at all, But man, it'd be like hallowed Tampa Bay sports ground. The Warwick Dunn Lateral to Sean King. It'd be like known as the Lateral or the Pitch. Like it would have one of those the names that we would just say it and everybody would know. And almost nobody really talks about it now. Although me and my buddies who were there do still talk about it. I'm sure people who were there at the Minneapolis Miracle will still talk about it. And I'm sure people who were at the Shot Heard Around the World used to talk about it back in their primes. But it's just not the same. It's not, you gotta finish stuff like that. The Vikings, you go out and do what they did against the Saints and the whole thing. I mean, you can't just go out and get hammered the next week. But they did, and we've got our Super Bowl team. So like I said, we'll talk more about the Super Bowl next week. But I am excited. I have not moved on like so many others have to the draft. I mean, I can reel them off. The Kentucky Derby, Masters Sunday. I'm trying to think, really, think of this, for everybody it's different. A lot of y'all might not care about the same things I care about, but there's a very short list of sporting events that matter so much that, like, you actually feel a little bit different waking up the morning of the event, whether one of your teams is involved or not. They're so special and so fun that, you know, and the Super Bowl is for that, for those, is one of those for sure. Like, no matter who's playing in the Super Bowl, and it's only been the Bucks one time, or how little I care about either team, it's not even about, it's not about the teams. If it had been Vikings, Jags, it's still the Super Bowl. It's the Super Bowl. Like, I always have a little bit of a butterfly in my stomach feeling on Sunday morning, waking up that day, like, hey, it's Super Bowl Sunday, you know? Same thing with Masters Sunday. Same thing on Derby Day. I love the Kentucky Derby. I can't really, those are the only three I can think of that, oh, the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament, which are not a singular event, but I mean, those days, like, I actually, my outlook on life is different those days. Maybe a couple others that I can't think of right now, but that's about it. And that's what we got with the Super Bowl. Now, as far as the Pro Bowl this weekend, let me say my piece about the Pro Bowl. It's kind of my same as my piece about preseason football that everybody complains about. Listen, I think there's too many preseason games, too. They don't mean anything. The Pro Bowl doesn't mean anything. But would you rather not have anything at all? Like, raise your hand and honestly tell me, would you rather there just not be a Pro Bowl this weekend? Because that's the alternative. I mean, it's like, what are you complaining about the Pro Bowl for? You don't have to watch it, but why are you complaining about it? At least on Sunday, we get to flip the TV on. I mean, it's Al Michaels and Collinsworth, isn't it, I think? It feels like a game. It's a game. It's something. They're wearing uniforms. They're hitting. It's the Pro Bowl. I mean, I don't get it. Like, same with preseason. Like, I think four is way too many preseason games, but what if they said, okay, well, we're just not going to have a couple weeks of preseason, just two preseason games now. I'm not for adding games to the regular season. People say, oh, well, yeah, we went 18 games and two preseason. No, I don't want that. 16's just right. So would you rather have 16 and four or 16 and two? I mean, I'll take the four preseason games, I guess. I mean, it's better even that last fourth preseason game on a Thursday night when there's nothing going on. It's just garbage. I mean, it's garbage. Although usually that falls on the same night as the first night of college football season, so you got that. But even if you didn't, like, do you not want to have a game on? Like, I at least like having a game to turn on, even if nobody's playing and the starting, you know, I don't need all the starters. I'd rather have something than nothing. Same with Maction. People make fun with college football. Oh, your Tuesday night Maction. It's Western Michigan versus Central Michigan. Oh, I can't believe they put this on TV. Yeah, talk to me in April when there's no football anywhere near coming or going. I'd crawl through the desert across hot, broken glass for a quarter of Miami of Ohio versus Bowling Green on a Tuesday night. Something is always better than nothing. So you can make fun of something when there's other things, but it ain't so easy to make fun of it when there ain't nothing else. I'm going to watch the Pro Bowl on Sunday. And I encourage you, if you're one of those football types like me who's just happy to have football, to watch it. I'm not trying to get you to turn into a degenerate gambler or anything, but you can bet on the Pro Bowl. In fact, email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com and I will set you up with my customer code for my website, and I'll get a bonus. I'm just kidding about that. I don't want to be responsible for starting anybody on a terrible path in life. And it's okay, I guess, to bet on the Pro Bowl, you know, in a small amount, but when it's the first sports betting wager you've ever made, that's probably a bad sign. But seriously, I'll a couple bucks on the parlay. Give me the NFC and the under 85.5 or whatever the hell it is. And now you're into it. I've had some really fun gambling moments watching the Pro Bowl. There was one year where like it was right up against the over-under. I can't remember the score. But they were going for a game-winning field goal that would have put the game over. And I'm like, oh my God, I had the under. I was like, miss it, miss it, miss it, miss it. And this is the meaningless, you know, Pro Bowl. So the field goal got blocked and the ball's bouncing around. And then like both teams poured onto the field to shake hands. Some player who didn't even have their helmet on like picked the ball up and started running toward the end zone. And I'm like, wait, no, no, he's going to return the blocked field goal for points. I'm still going to get beat on the. And he scored, but there was all these people on the field with no helmet on. And I was like, they're not counting that right. And there was this big discussion. Like it took like 10 minutes after the game for them to make the official final. And I'm online with my betting website, like, you know, trying to find the 800 number to call them and say, you can't count that. I'm all going to raise all kinds of hell. It's the dumbest, like literally the stupidest thing ever. And they ended up not counting the touchdown. I won my bet, but that's not the point. The point is, it was action, baby. So this Sunday, and it's Gasparilla weekend. So with all that going on, you know, that's going to fill up. And of course, we got the NHL All-Star Game here in town on Sunday as well, which is a lot of fun. But anyway, I'll take it. It's football. So, one last thing I wanted to say, and we're keeping it short today. Light edition here on the Joe Bucks fan free stretch today with the Super Bowl bye week. Gasparilla. For those of you, and we got listeners probably on the internet here on the podcast, could be anywhere, but for those of you in the Bay Area, those of you that are going to Gasparilla, near and dear to my heart, I'm Tampa native, born and raised, been going to Gasparilla since I was a little kid. And especially now, I live in South Tampa, not far from Bayshore, so we can head out there. I always like to go over a few tips and some things for people to enjoy Gasparilla with. And, you know, now that I've gotten older, it's changed a lot. I mean, it used to be a childhood thing when I was a kid that my mommy and daddy would take me to, and we'd see the Pirates and catch the beads. Then it got into the whole just party your ass off vibe of the teens and early 20s, where we'd wake up at, you know, 7 in the morning on Gasparilla Day to go out and start partying. And you do that for a little while. Then you hit your mid-late 20s. You know, you meet your girl. And now I've got two kids. And now it's swung back all the way, come around again. Now I'm doing it with my kids through their eyes the same way my parents took me. So there's a million different ways. But whatever it is you're doing, my advice to you, first of all, just my little rules for Gasparilla. Stay mobile. All right, don't be one of those people, oh, we're bringing a cooler, we're going to put some Goldschlager in there, dude, and we're going to put a couple bottles of vodka, and this, and then you're carrying a cooler around. You see those people every year. Total rookie mistake. You don't need to lug a ton of alcohol around. Get a little Camelback bag or something, and whatever, if you're an alcohol person, which I'm not even an alcohol person, but if you are, there's lots of better ways. Stay mobile, all right? Walking is always the best way to do things, but if it's too far to walk, hey, bikes are your friend during Gasparilla. I've always amazed at the people and the stories I hear about, oh my God, I got caught. I had to walk from Bayshore in Delaware over to, you know, Seminole Heights because of Gasparilla. We couldn't party. I mean, what are you doing? Just bike. Drive your car if you don't live in South Tampa, somewhere in South Tampa. Park the car. And I don't mean park it anywhere near Bayshore. Park it at Britton Plaza or something. Like somewhere where there's no Gasparilla blowback, and yet you're pretty close to it. And then with your bike, if you can put your bike in your car, have your bike, and then ride your bike, you can go anywhere you want easily. Use your bike. And third of all, remember that even though this is the big parade, they do have a children's parade the week before, which we went to last week, me and my kids. It's still a kid. There's lots of kids at Gasparilla too, like the real Gasparilla. Beads are worthless. It's just a symbolic fun thing. Like, don't be the guy catching beads over kids. I got two boxes of beads in my garage I barely know what to do with, just from over the years. You can come have some of those if you want. Like, there's no reason. The beads are not a thing. It's fun to catch them. I'm not saying don't catch them. But don't be the guy reaching over kids to catch them. Don't be the guy who's drunk and thinks it's funny to ball the beads up and throw them back at the parade. You know, and we've all done. Listen, over the years, I've made a lot of these mistakes myself. Just be cool. Have fun. it's really going to be fun this year with the parade and the All-Star game going on the next day. The skills competition is that night. There's all the festivities involved with the All-Star game, both at the arena itself, around there, outside in it, downtown's Curtis Hickson Park. Have fun. I remember in 2000, again, 2000, which would have been the Bucks in the Super Bowl if it had gone the way I thought it could go. But that was the year that they had Gasparilla on Saturday here and the Super Bowl here in Tampa the next day, though. There was no bye week then. It was like the game was this weekend, the day after Gasparilla. And that year, I was in college, but I came home that weekend for the parade. I mean, you could not even move. I mean, Gasparilla is always crowded, but Bayshore, for all the way from Bay to Bay all the way downtown, was just slammed. Jam-packed, jelly tight. I'll never forget it. It was unbelievable. Imagine if that had been like Gasparilla that day, and then the next day was the Super Bowl with the Bucks in it. I mean, I don't even know what that would have been like, but it won't be quite like that this year, but it'll still be a lot of fun. So have fun, enjoy it, if that's what you're doing. If you're really having a football Jones, okay, here's one last thing I'll tell you, and you're really just hard up, like, and the Pro Bowl's not doing it for you, there is football in the Bay Area this weekend. The Dunedin Pirates, semi-pro football team, 18 and over, amateur, from the Florida Football Alliance, of which I'm a proud member of. We take the field at Dunedin High School for our first game of the season on Saturday evening at 5 p.m. If you want to go to the game, again, 5 p.m. at Dunedin High School, the Dunedin Pirates, we take on the Jax X-Men, they call themselves. They're from Jacksonville. And I've got that little tingle in my stomach. Again, I've talked about this before. I'm 37. I have no business playing semi-pro football. This is completely stupid on my part. And I'll be lucky to get through the season without getting injured. But I'm doing it anyway, because when you have two kids and you get a little bit older, you know, life can get a little bit redundant. There can be a sameness to every day. And I just wanted something exciting. This is my second year doing it. I played last year, too. Ernest Givens, former Oilers wide receiver. St. Petersburg native. He's our head coach. Getting to be around him, watch him, listen to him, learn from him as he is coaching football has been really cool. And it's a really fun thing if you want to take your kids or anything like that. I mean, it's cheap. Kids get in free. It's like $7 for adults. Again, Dunedin High School, 5 p.m. on Saturday. And it's football, man. I'm not talking about like a flag football league. This is pads, helmets, uniforms. Dunedin Pirates. Go to DunedinPirates.com for more info. I'm nervous. And my old high school football coach, Dominic Sio, at Jesuit, he's now over at Berkeley Prep, but he was at Jesuit in the late 90s when I was there. He used to always say, if you're not nervous, you're not ready. And with football, at least, it's definitely true. I mean, football is not a game you just kind of, hey, pick up basketball, let's run out and play ball a little bit. I mean, you got to get into a mental place to play a football game. At any level, it's not, I mean, this is not a high level of football by any means, but, you know, there's still somebody across from you who's trying to hurt you legally. And you have to get yourself into a mental place to go play. And I've been spending all week, like, thinking about Saturday afternoon already. And I love that old feeling. That's one of the reasons I do this. You know, that competitive feeling that you can't get from just going to the local park and playing pickup basketball. There's nothing like football. Now, if you want to be a part of that, come catch some of the action. And we've got games. You can go see the schedule. This is the first game of the year. You know, we play a bunch all the way through April. Check it out at DunedinPirates.com. In the meantime, thanks to the Joes for putting this on the site, as always. Next week will be our big Super Bowl show, and I'll talk a lot about the game itself and about all the things, memories. You know, I always like to, you know, take things in the present, relate them to things that happened in the past. We'll do all that stuff. If you want to email me and get a hold of me, always welcome hearing from you guys. Love getting your emails. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, hit me up, @BobbyGameDay. In the meantime, again, thanks to the Joes, I am Bobby Fenton, the Super Bowl bye week edition of the Free Stretch, wherever you are. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, and let's go Bucks.